Number 13, 2012. The time is 6:16. Roll call, please.
Quisenberry?
Here.
Richard?
Here.
Gonzalez?
Here.
Schrader?
Here.
Alex?
Here.
Ammons?
Here.
Anderson? Benzel?
Here.
Ferguson?
Here.
Best?
Here.
Carter?
Here.
Cowart?
Brandon?
Esri, Holderfield,
here.
James,
here.
Jay,
here.
Gibbler,
here.
Hertz, Langenheim,
here.
Maxwell,
here.
McGinty, Michael,
here.
Mitchell,
here.
Mosier,
here.
O'Connor, Petrie,
here.
Esri?
Here.
Bible.
Here, we have a quorum. Mr. McGinty, is ill, Mr. Curtis is ill, Ms. Anderson didn't get you to go to town. I seek approval of the minutes for three legislative budget hearings for August 27th, 28th, 29th, and committee of the whole minutes on October 9th. These are most approved.
Second.
By Mr. Langenheim, second, Mr. Beth. Discussion on the minutes of any of those meetings. None. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Seek approval of the agenda and the addenda.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Gonzalez, second by Mr. Carter. I'll remove item 7A2 because Mr. Mosier has changed his mind, is not applying to the Drainage District position. So we'll take that off the agenda. That's item 7A2. Any other changes? Say none. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Next up is public participation. I've not received anybody who's interested. Does anybody want to speak to public participation? Seeing none, we'll move on to communications. Any communications from the board? Ms. Busey has something to say to the board.
If you are going to be a new board member on December 3rd at the organizational meeting, you got a book like this tonight. This is orientation materials for all board members, whether you're returning or you're new. There's a memo that covers what is included right on the inside pocket, and there's a USB key, which is a live recording of each of the presentations that are included in the book. We need you to confirm contact information. If you're a new board member, we need employment information, and there's other information included. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact me. We strongly encourage you to review this material. Thanks.
Any other communications? Okay. Let's move on to policy for us on opponents. Ms. Adams.
Ms. Chair, this is my last meeting with my good friend, Stan James, who's not sitting behind me right now, and I'm having a hard time with that.
Make no faces.
So I really appreciate being able to be on this board for the last 40 years. I've learned a tremendous amount from all of you, and certainly it won't be the last time that you'll see me, but certainly in this capacity, I really enjoyed my stay here. We'll go on and move policy item A1, Rural Transit Advisory Group. Three terms expiring 11/30/2014. Three applicants, Mr. Wiley, your appointment.
My nominations are Seamus Riley, Andrew Kovinsky, and Michelle Ramage.
Second.
There's a second, Mr. James. Any discussion on these appointments? Ms. Petrie.
Mr. Chair, I have an information question concerning the application of Michelle Ramage. The way I read her application is she lives in Mahomet, but then goes on to talk about she feels she can represent the needs of the Rantoul community.
Can I respond to that, Chair?
She's the superintendent of the K-8 city schools.
And Thompson. She was with Thompsonville, so she has a wealth of knowledge of our community.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Further discussion? See none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Item 2 has been removed. Item 3, Public Aid Appeals Committee, 2 terms expiring 11/30/2014. Mr. Weibel.
My nomination are Mr. James Rusk and Ms. Carol Elliott.
Second.
Second by Mr. Kibler. Any discussion on these two appointments? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Item 4, Senior Services Advisory Committee, 5 terms expiring 11/30/2015. Mr. Weibel.
I have 4 of the 5 to nominate tonight. Ms. Tammy Truling Voges, Linda Haskell, Kathy Lentz, and Karen Bodnar.
Second.
Second by Mr. Esri. Any discussion on these appointments? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? The motion carries. Number 5, Zoning Board of Appeals, 1 term expiring 11/30/2017.
I nominate Eric Thornton.
Second. I'm sorry, who said
that? Mr. Mayor. Please.
Any discussion on that nomination? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Motion carries. Item 6, Animal Control Administrator, 1 term expiring 11/30/2014.
Nominate Ms. Stephanie Jones.
First, second.
Second by Ms. Holderfield. Any discussion on this nomination? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? The motion carries. Item 7, Nursing Home Board of Directors, 2 terms expiring 11/30/2014. Mr. Weibel.
I nominate Ms. Mary Hodson as a new member and Mr. Robert Blankus as a returning member.
Second.
Second.
Mr. Quisenberry, thank you. Any discussion on these two appointments, Ms. Petrie?
Yes, I move to postpone this motion until the policy meeting January of 2013.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second to Ms. Holderfield.
May I speak to the reason for doing this? The reason that I have made this motion is as I was reading the bylaws of the nursing home, it says that as of the 31st of January 2012, the nursing home board of directors no longer exists because we did not renew it. It was explained to me by Mr. Betts when I brought this up during caucus that the nursing home board of directors resolution trumps anything that's in the bylaws. I searched for the resolution and I haven't been able to find it yet. So I'd like to have that window of time so that we do are able to look at the nursing home board of directors resolution to make certain that we are following correctly on appointing these individuals. That's the main reason for it.
Ms. Ashford and then Mr. Bess.
Chris was looking up the thing on his machine. It says that we made a 3-year contract, good till 2014, with some management, and in that referred to the board of directors, so I would assume that extends.
Mr. Best.
I'm not returning to the county, but as a general rule, board resolution or board adopted contract to generally supersede bylaws by an entity that is created by the board. That is the general rule. Assuming that to be correct, we can add tonight, but even assuming it not to be correct, we could get an answer, we could move this forward so we can appoint this body for the 27th, we can get a determination of whether or not this is the properly constituted body. I don't think it's very difficult to get that particular answer. I see no reason to postpone this appointment.
Ms. Holderfield, again, Mr.
Well, part of the reason why I seconded that, and I agree with Kathy, following the nominations, the Board of Directors Nursing Home Board should have presented a list of
This person who applied is a legitimate applicant. The list from the nursing home is a list of suggested people who would be, in their opinion, be good to be nominated by the chair to that board. The chair has the power to do that. I can take that list. If they gave me a list, if they gave me a list this time, I could ignore it if they gave me a list. And it's up to me to make a nomination. I solicited Ms. Haas in this case. I think she's a very good nominee. She's got background of working at the nursing home. She's got a position. She's in an HR position. She replaced someone who's in HR. She's an excellent candidate. There are no rules that prevent her from being nominated. Those are just guidelines that say that people from the board should recommend other people. The list is zero. That doesn't mean we can't nominate someone. We're making lots of hoops when we don't need these hoops. So we should vote on it now. We'll look at things like that. Particularly what Ms. Teacher came up with between now and the county board meeting.
I have Mr. Carter and Mr. Kidd.
Well, I just hope the board sit down in the near future to have a real discussion about the nursing home. It needs a bath. And I think we done put it off too long. That's an entity in our body, and I think it needs to be looked at.
And Mr. Kubler and then Mr. Ellis and then Mr. Ellis.
My question is with respect to their current terms, specifically Dr. Plinkus and I think Mary Ellen O'Shaughnessy is the other person that's coming off the board. Assuming that we do delay this until January, the board will be operating with five members, two of them county boards that haven't been appointed yet, so theoretically it would be a three-member board. Will they be meeting at all in the month of December or January, maybe before we have a chance to give them two more members to operate?
They have a scheduled meeting December 10th, and they have a scheduled meeting in January.
Okay, thank you.
I have Mr. Allen.
It seems clear to me that these two applicants seem eminently qualified. When I looked at these applications, I was pretty pleased to see these choices. I think that they can give some good guidance to the which is why we have a work record in the first place. I mean, I agree with Patsy that the legislation here is clear as mud. I mean, bylaws say it sunsets in 2012. Then there's a contract renewal for 3 years that includes mention of the board, so it'd be nice to get the language cleaned up, and we need to have a resolution that explicitly extended we should do that just to make sure we've got our I's dotted. I think we should probably go ahead. I'm concerned about this board operating with different seats on it. These people appear to be qualified, and I think we should go forward.
Ms. Betts.
I agree with what Mr. Alex said. I know many companies are very, very well qualified, but they've negotiations with her for a number of years. I'm amazed that she's able to do this, quite frankly. And my other concern is if, in fact, you believe that that board ceased to legally exist in January 2012. We have about 11 months of work because Ron and I have had board that would be put in limbo. I do not in any way, shape, or form think that they have acted outside of the law. We haven't had to ratify everything that they have done because we've appointed a semi-independent board. But not point the folks right now for that reason. It would be very, very foolish in my view to have a very small group of people making this kind of position that need to be made. I think we can get legal clarification pretty easily.
I have Mr. Benzel and then Mr. Maxwell.
Thank you. Just, I guess, for the record on these two, I have no problem with either one of them. But I think to Mr. Betts' point, that's kind of where I was headed with this, too. I'd like to know how quickly we could get some kind of a legal opinion on this. If this board is operating outside of its scope, in other words, it should have ended in January. We have a board meeting Monday night. I would like to see us try to get some kind of opinion whether this is legal and proper or not. If it's not, then I think that board meeting on Monday night probably should be postponed. We shouldn't be paying for dues to a board that is not functional or shouldn't be functional.
Mr. Maxwell.
It's obvious we need to take a look at these bylaws. Several things in them that have to be changed, including the number of board members it takes to remove somebody from the board of directors. We have to reduce from 14 down to 12. directors back to the board. We could put more board, county board members on there without expanding, because it says, the bylaws say that we can have at least, there must be at least two county board members. So, in theory, we could put more county board members without changing the bylaws at all. I think the key is, and we've had some good board members, the key in the future is to continue to have good board members, that is, county board members that will communicate back to the full board. I really don't even know that these folks have much of a legal function. They're advisory. So, I think early on they filled a good function. I think we need to keep taking a look at that. We may want to take a look at our administration. The current administration has got us to a certain point. We may want to go to a higher level. So these are the kind of things that we as a board, and I think Lloyd has a very good point. It's time for us all to sit down and talk about it. Thank you.
I was just sort of going to echo what Gary said, but my train of thought is that when you have a resolution or you have language that says it will sunset, we've had other things that come before us from the public where they say, well, you read your own resolutions. And to me, we're the body that sets that. We ought to adhere to that. And if there's a question of legality, we ought to get that answered before we move forward. I'm not objectionable to these people. I think they seem qualified, as everybody else has said. But here we go trying to circumvent our own rules because it seems to fit our need, and I just don't like it.
I just want to make sure I'm on the record of making sure that everyone understands. I have no problem with the people that have come forward to serve. I have a problem with us not following the guidelines that we have set forth. That's all. And I think we have to, as Dan said, we have to make sure that if we're setting up guidelines, if we're setting up rules, then we have to follow them. We are the responsible party to the constituency. If we set this up, we have to make sure that we follow through. That's all. Thank you.
Ms. Wyman.
Guidelines are guidelines. By their definition, they guide you in a direction. It's not a narrow path. It can be a wide path. And finally, Mr. Maxwell, I want to point out that this is an advisory board. It's not it's not based on any state law which says they can continue if they're not reappointed or if they're not replaced. That is only to certain. Is it in the bylaws?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry for that. We're not correct on that.
I'm going to take one more comment and then I'll make a comment and we'll move on. Mr. Richards.
I think we need to move forward with this tonight, because I think by the full board, when we take the real vote on this, we will have a chance to clear up the legality of this. If we don't do this tonight, we are going to have to wait another month. And if we look into the bylaws and it is correct that there's a problem, we can vote this down at the full board.
I'll just say at this point, since this is my last night on this issue, I believe that what has been made evident is, as in so many other cases, the board often gets lost in its own resolutions and we kind of forget what we actually passed. And we don't have a mechanism by which to bring those back when it's time to review. And this is an example of that lack of review. I would hesitate, since the county board itself is not going to have its own committee of the whole in December, it's okay to postpone these till January and make those appointments. It won't end a thing if these people are not appointed for December's meeting. So I would recommend that this committee not appoint those people until January. We're having a calendar December. But nonetheless, they are working at the discretion of this board. And then secondly, I'll say, just because we need to say it, that an advisory committee often turns into the decision-making body by virtue that they're the experts, and all of a sudden nobody challenges anything that's brought before you. I would encourage the elected officials to actually be elected officials on this issue and not make the appointments until all of your questions have been answered and all legal areas have been covered. That is the responsibility of the elected official, and that's what I encourage you to do on this motion.
Amen.
I won't take any more comments at this point. We're going to move on this vote since it had not been pulled.
Motion to defer.
There's a motion to defer on the floor?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's right, Cassie's.
Motion to defer
until January.
January 21st.
January's policy meeting that we have changed.
That's it.
What I said.
And Mr. Carter seconded. We're going to vote on the motion to defer till January of 2013. Voice vote. All in favor of the deferment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposition?
Aye.
I move that motion carries. That's fine. Division of Assembly. Show of hands, motion to defer for January 13th. So who's counting? Clerk.
Okay. Those opposed?
Those opposed.
9, 10, 11, 12. It fails.
Motion fails. Back to the main motion. All in favor of the appointment?
I'm sorry. Since my amendment did fail, then I'm assuming from the conversation that ensued in conjunction with that amendment that there will be resolution to some of the questions we had for the county board meeting.
I mean, we'll have to if it doesn't pass. Okay. All in favor of the appointments of, let me go back to my. Hodson and Palenkas. All in favor of the appointment of Hodson and Palenkas to the two terms 11/30/2014. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposition?
Aye.
That motion carries. All right. Number 8, Community Action Board, unexpired term ending 12/31/2015. Mr.
Weibel. I nominate Mr. Stephen Carter.
Second.
Second by Mr. Mosher, I think.
I think that was Steve, so.
Any discussion on that appointment? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? That motion carries. County Clerk. Any reports, County Clerk?
I think my report's in your packet. I would just ask that you accept it and place it on file.
I entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Kibble and Mr. James. Any discussion on that report? Any questions to the clerk? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? The motion carries. Thank you. We are moving to item C, Champaign County's Electric Aggregation Program. Item 1, Approval of Plan of Operation and Governance. I'll ask Ms. Busey to discuss that for us.
Andrew Levy from RPC is also here this evening, and you have a memo from him in your packet. There are basically three decisions that we need the county board to make this evening in order for us to be able to complete the plan of operations and governance, and those are outlined in his memo. One is to determine whether or not the county should recoup its costs from preparing to have this issue before the voters and getting it going. And you'll see from Andrew's memo that the cost is anticipated to be approximately $10,000, and it would be recouped by a $1 fee paid by each participating member after the aggregation plan is up and running. So we need a decision from the board on that. The second issue is whether or not Champaign County Board will collect a municipal fee with regard to the rate that's charged to those who participate in the municipal aggregation. And the recommendation is that the county board collect a fee of 0.1 cents per kilowatt hour, which is anticipated to generate approximately $90,000 of revenue per year. And the third issue is a decision to be made with regard to the energy mix that is purchased by the county for its users when the bids are received on December 11th. And Andrew, I'm sure you could provide a bit more detail on all three of those issues if you want to come to the podium and maybe talk about it.
Sure. I think I'm Andrew Levy, planner of the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission. Put together this memo for you. I think Deb did a great job of explaining it. So I guess I'm really just here for any
And the other thing I would say is that if you could make a decision on each of these issues, then they will be incorporated into the plan of operations and governance, and we would need your final vote to be approving the total plan of operations and governance after you've made these three decisions.
Questions, Ms. Petrie?
Yes, I have two information questions for you. The first one is there going to be anything that will facilitate potential customers to make comparisons on these systems as to whether they would want to opt out?
Yeah, in the notice, there will be included the default Ameren rate, which is essentially what they're paying right now. That will be included in the notice of opt-out, along with what they will be paying, so they can make that comparison at the time that they have the opportunity to opt out.
Is there going to be any information provided on power plant pricing as in a matrix so that they can look at?
Not to my knowledge, but this is the opt-out notice is something that the county is able to work with the selected supplier at the time that those notices go out. So if that's something that the county board wishes to go in, that can be discussed with the supplier.
I would urge that to be the case. And then the second one has to do with renewable energy source. When the energy goes into the pipe, it mixes. So where is this demarcation going to come from that this is exactly renewable energy that might be the option?
So these are renewable energy credits. These are certified by the EPA. They're certified, I believe in the memo I've noted how those are. They're based on Green E standards. That's something that can be researched on the internet. They're very specific standards as to what counts as renewable energy. And so that's all readily available information.
Okay. Mr. Howell.
A couple things to Ms. Petrie's points. I understand it may not exactly be what you're asking, Patsy, because you probably want people who are not already on carbon pricing to be aware of its existence. But I do believe, and you can confirm this, I believe that people who are already on power smart pricing will have to explicitly opt into the program rather than opt out. And my second comment is and is that the renewable versus non-renewable energy distinction has to do, in my opinion, it has to do with who the provider buys the power from, what generators they buy from. It does all come over the same wire, but the money that we pay in rates is going to the aggregator who is buying power from the generator, and those generators are as renewable as they say as they were. My question for you, Mr. Levy, is do we have an idea on this lowest cost versus, as I read this, we look at the lowest cost solution and we look at the 50% renewable solution, and 50% renewable solution is within a tenth of a cent per kilowatt hour. We go with that, otherwise we go with the lowest cost. Is that, am I reading that right?
That's what I'm proposing, and it's the 100% renewable option. Right, so I'm recommending.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. 100% renewable option, if it's within a penny per kilowatt hour.
Right, within the hundredth of a penny per kilowatt hour delivered.
And I'm guessing that since that's the same as we're proposing the fee to generate, the theory would be you're saying that basically the difference between the two would be approximately $90,000 over the whole account, over all the rate variable account.
That's our best estimate.
Do you have a feel for, or do we have information from Urbana that's already done this? What did they look at that, and what was the difference at that point? Did they go with 100% renewable, or did they go with the lowest cost if you don't have the differential?
They did go with 100% renewable, both Champaign and Urbana did. It was less than a tenth of a penny, I apologize. In Urbana's case, it was very close. It was 99/100. Very, very close. Champaign got a little bit different rate, so their spread was a little bit different, but both of them were under that.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Senator Kibler's first, and then Mr. Jones.
My biggest concern is with the additional fee agreement option, the county fee. Basically, we're talking about a $90,000 fund that's just sitting there. We really have, besides the $10,000 cost we're going to try to recoup, we talked about ongoing program costs and so forth. Can you talk a little bit about what those ongoing program costs would actually be, how much they would be, and for how long they would be? Can you speak a little bit to that?
Well, actually, the $90,000 is a fee that would be not directly associated with the county's cost of administering the program. And under the finance portion of this agenda, if you approve the fee, there's a recommendation of what the county board would do to segregate that fee for a specific use.
Okay, so good. You stepped ahead to my second part. What's the true difference between these two items, between getting this $90,000 here versus later? So I guess I'll just keep that question for later then.
If you approve the fee, it is $90,000 of ongoing annual revenue estimated. And so if you approve the fee under finance, we're recommending that you establish what you will use that revenue for. Am I answering your question?
Yes, you answered it.
And the $10,000 is just a one-time recoup of cost. That's not ongoing. That only gets charged to the users one time.
Understood.
As a setup.
Mr. James.
Well, I guess following up on that, if we're going to anticipate an estimated $90,000 that we're going to make, and I'm assuming it'll go into general court, then the board will decide where that money's going to be dispersed or some of that.
Well, the recommendation is that you deposit that money into the Capital Asset Replacement Fund and use it for energy efficiency or energy improvements of the county's facilities.
So that dollar fee is to recoup the cost that it costs to put the referendum out there, but if we're going to make 90, I guess in the scheme of things, the dollars aren't going to hurt anybody, but we're estimating all that. And my second question would be, this is only Ameren customers, because there's a lot of people I know out of 24 Gifford and out north of Rantoul that are on Eastern Illini, so they won't be affected by this at all.
No.
So they're Champaign County residents, but they don't have a say so. I just wanted to be clear on that because if there have been questions, thank you.
Any other questions on that? Mr. Mulcher?
Yeah. I live on Ameren Line East out of Urbana. I've got three bend sites. They're all on three-phase power. We're going to have to hop out on all three of those because the residents has got a higher rate than we pay on bends with three-phase.
Are you getting three bills for each of those three?
Yes.
Then you will have to opt out each three, all three of those bills, yep.
Well, that's going to affect that whole line from 130 clear out to St. Joe Township on Windsor Road and 1250 south, and I don't know how far north. There's a whole lot of that that's all three-phase power.
I'd like to make a motion that we recoup our costs of approximately $10,000 as a lump sum from it will come from the Winnie Electric supplier.
Second.
Second
by
Tom.
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 Mr. Tom. Any discussion on that? Any further? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? The motion carries. Mr. Wiley.
I'd like to move that we plan to collect 1/10 of a cent or 0.001 per kilowatt delivered fee. It will be included as part of the program, and that well, that's period right
there. Second. Any discussion on that? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? That motion carries. Thank you. Item C2, designation of county administrator.
No,
I'm sorry, I missed one.
I'll do the third part, too.
All right.
I move that we charge a premium. I move that we set a premium of 0.001 per kilowatt hour delivered, be adopted with a 100% renewable mix. Is that right, Mr. Levy? Okay.
Is there a second to that, Mr. Peck? Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? That motion carries. Now we go to item 16.
No, now you need to approve C1 as you defined it under ADMC. You need to adopt the entire plan of operations and go home.
What? Mr. Wiley, why do you say that?
I move that we have approved the plan of operations and governance as is outlined in this agenda.
So moved on Ms. Sauer. Any other discussion on C1? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? That motion carries. Now we are moving to C2. Mr. Weigel.
I move that we designate the County Administrator, Ms. Gilgenson, to execute the final contract on behalf of Champaign County on the good day, December 11th, 2012.
Second
by Mr. Langenheim. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? The motion carries. Thank you. Davis County Administrator, report.
The monthly report is in your packet for your information. Okay, so I would ask that you receive and place it on file.
So moved. Second.
I'm sorry, that was quick. Mr. Benzel, Mr. Rosales, any discussion on those two? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Motion carries.
The next item is from the Job Content Evaluation Committee. As you may recall, there were three positions presented to you in August for evaluation from the county clerk. One of those took a little longer. You did the other positions last month. We had to get a designation from the state's attorney as to whether or not the lead tax extension specialist was exempt or non-exempt under FLSA. The state's attorney's office determined that it is non-exempt, so we proceeded with the reevaluation of the position. And based on the current responsibilities assigned to this position, the Job Content Evaluation Committee has recommended that it be upgraded to grade range I, and that is the request presented to you here.
Move adoption
of
the recommendation.
Second. Second by Mr. Langenheim. Moved by Mr. Alex. Any discussion on this recommendation? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? The motion carries.
The next item is a calendar of your meetings for 2013, and this is based on the changes to the board rules that you did last month. I would point out one correction before you move to approve this. On February, we have listed February 26, 2013, reserved for a county board study session. We'd ask that you please change that to February 28th, which would be a Thursday, because February 26th is the day of the primary election.
Motion to change?
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Edwards.
Second.
Moved by Ms. James. Discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? The motion carries.
And the holiday calendar is just for your information. That's all. Thank you.
And we have, I'm sorry, one more computer one. We're going to have that. Proposed rule change.
Yep.
All right, board members, I hope you had a chance to look at these proposed rule changes, and we're going to try to move them one at a time, include discussion in them. This was presented by Ms. Kathy Peace, 3 October.
No, the first one is
the first one is
Christmas.
So let's just go one at a time down here.
Sure.
I'll entertain a motion for the first rule change, and then we can discuss.
So
moved by Mr. James.
Point of order, what's the motion? Just a
motion to approve the rule changes stated in.
Can see which one it is.
Pardon me?
You can state what it is specifically.
It's multiple, so let's.
It's just one rule change. It's on page 89.
Oh, are we skipping one?
You need me to read that whole thing?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Rule change 8?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I can read it if you'd all like, but it'll take you 10 minutes.
No.
Okay.
So read it. Okay, I'll take it back.
We'll move back, actually, because we need to look at that proposal.
Well, I'm sticking with the agenda.
So you can, Mr. James, why don't you do that? Why don't you take the 10 minutes and read it?
No. You really want me to read it?
Yes, I do.
Okay, written notice of any proposed changes to these rules is to be presented to the Committee of the Whole at least 14 days prior to any consideration of such changes. unless said changes are being proposed as the rules to be adopted by the county board at the biannual organizational meeting, in which case the 14-day advance notice requirement shall not apply. So,
that's this move, and Ms. Holder, can you second that move? Discussion on that.
Who wrote that?
Mr. Betts.
I'm opposed to it. I'm not going to be here to deal with it, but I'll tell you why I'm opposed. It allows whoever happens to have the majority after the election to, in effect, rewrite all of the rules in one night as a little rump activity. And I wouldn't like it if the Republicans did it to the Democrats. I wouldn't like it if the Democrats did it to the Republicans. No, this is a really, really good idea. It's public. It's out there for the press. It's out there for all the board members. It's out there on our website. There's no possibility of someone at that biennial meeting having 50 rules, having prearranged the magic number for a majority, and just rubbing them right through. That's not good government. I'm going to vote against this, even though I know a lot of people like the idea. It's dangerous for either political party to that government.
Anybody else? Mr. Commissioner.
May I direct a question to Mr. Beth?
Sure.
Mr. Bez, I'm presuming to speak for Mr. Alex, and I'm assuming there is a good intent behind the suggestion in that something might surface at the last moment. Is there some way that you can suggest a change of the wording that would not allow a whole rewrite under the circumstances, but would allow a little bit of flexibility?
Not without 14 days' notice. Which we would need to do the change you're talking about. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. And I am sure there are good intentions here. And I'm also sure it's a bad idea for both political parties to start waiting to notice on something as important as rules.
I have Ms. Alex and Mr. President.
All right, well, in the interest of continuing the discussion, I would make an amendment to this that rule changes which were not given 14 days advance notice would be able to be passed only upon 2/3 majority of the president.
Is there a second to this? Second by Ms. Kohler. Discussion on that, Mr. President.
Yeah, and my discussion on that is the same as my discussion.
Okay.
I was going to say anyway. I guess, in any case, this body can vote to suspend the rules in the situation. And that, and I would like to know, Mr. Betts, is that what's required to suspend the rules?
Is supermajority.
Supermajority.
Point of order, that rule cannot be suspended. The rule says
this
cannot
be suspended.
You cannot suspend the rule of 14-day notice. Cannot be suspended.
Okay.
James.
Well, I guess here, when Tom said it gave me some food for thought, but I've been on this board now going on 10 years, and I know what Tom says about, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I've been there. But I don't really see anybody in this boardroom, on the road, Tom, not now, but I don't see anybody in this boardroom really coming in with 50 suggestions wanting to change. 14 days to me, I mean, there's times that things have come up, we need to tweak them or rewrite them, and I think it would help us to move it along a little faster than always carrying it over for 4 months, and then we also lose track of where we're at. That's my thought.
Mr. Kimmler.
I like the suggestion, the amendment. Do we need 14-day notice in order to actually change this amendment, given the text? So if we make this amendment, do we
but
not
this was have already 14 days.
But do we need additional 14 days to have the amendment on this?
Yes.
So if that's the case, then we probably need to defer this for 14 days or... Yeah, our whole county board meeting.
That is important.
There's a point of order there, right here.
I'm sorry.
Order, I guess.
Did you say point of order?
Yeah, point of order.
So what's the point?
I request a clarification from the board chair on the rules. Is, in fact, the 14-day notice the specific rule, or is it indicating that there's a discussion of the rules?
Well, I think it's substantial change.
Okay.
And I think that what your amendment is a substantial change.
Okay.
I mean, if it's a minor tweak, fine, but that's a substantial change.
So
it's not part of it.
So would that mean that my amendment is out of order?
I would. I think your amendment is out of order.
In that case, I would draw my amendment.
Mr. Langenheim.
Am I recognized?
Mr. Langenheim.
Thank you. I think it's inappropriate for this board to be changing the rules for new boards in a couple of weeks. So I move we defer the whole thing till January.
Is a move for deferment?
Second.
Second by Mr. Rosales. Got to recognize and deferment. We got to vote on deferment, correct?
We can discuss it first.
We can discuss the deferment. Go ahead, Mr. Kidd.
I was going to say, if we defer this, is it, well, if we make a deferment on this particular piece, will it allow us to change the proposal, or will the deferment not allow you to change it? It will let you change it. Okay, thank you.
Did I miss somebody?
Mr. Bergson, if we do that, can the organizational meeting in January change all the rules?
No.
They can't?
No.
A regular meeting.
All right, well, we're going to vote on the deferment. I'm going to try to voice vote this.
Sure.
All in favor of the deferment until January's policy meeting? Is that what we're talking about?
Sure.
Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposition?
Aye.
And motion carries for the deferment. All right. Now we can entertain the next one. All right, so the other suggested additional rule changes. I'll entertain a motion on those.
I think the whole package was over.
No.
Yeah, he said the whole thing.
Oh, well, no.
They
put
it.
No, because Mr. James only read the whole thing. Entertain another motion at this time.
Move to first, the January meeting.
Second.
Second.
Point of order. There's no motion on the floor to defer.
You gotta put something on the floor.
Yeah, I'm just motion to defer it.
I move on that.
I'm sorry, Mr. Dennis is making it.
Yes. I'd make a motion to move all of these on the list.
Second.
Now I move to defer.
Second.
Defer to when, Mr. Denzel? When do you defer?
To the January policy.
To the January policy meeting. Discussion on the deferment. Mr. Allen.
I am supportive of a number of these rule changes. I'm not supportive of some of these rule changes. I think it is appropriate that the new board make the decisions on the deferment.
Thank you. Any other discussion on the deferment of these changes till January? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition?
Aye.
That motion carries for deferment. I think I'm doing consent at this point. Correct. I have on consent item 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, C1, A, B, and C, and C2. Is that correct, Ms. Music?
7 is not on consent.
I'm sorry, not 7. 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, C1, A, B, and C, and C2.
Correct.
That's all for policy.
Thank you, Ms. Adams. Next up is Justice Self-Assurances, and Mr.
Good evening, everyone. We have two reports this evening, Community Justice Task Force, and a term report from the Citizens Advisory Committee on Jury Selection. We will be doing the Community Justice Task Force report first. You can email a copy. You have a physical copy on your desk if you want to follow along. Because of the setup, I guess we'll all go to the podium. So, Task Force. With the needs assessment process and several other things that we were looking at. I guess we'll get started with James, if you want to do you wrote the introduction, if you want to walk everybody through it. So, in turn to page one, this started with, in May of 2011, the National Institute of Corrections sent a team to examine and assess the county facilities, and I'm not going to torture you by reading the report. We had our team, we have a correction in here, Sheriff Walsh, Deputy UC and Lieutenant Craven, State Attorney Reese, and County Board Member Betts attended a planning for opening new institutions workshop run by NIC. If you remember, we also did a study session focused on replacing beds at the downtown jail. And this led to several solutions by the county board. Obviously, the task force was one of them. The needs assessment is another. And some of the concerns that emerged, some of them that we're looking at, some of them that the needs assessment is looking at, were the feasibility of repairing, upgrading, renovating, and repurposing the downtown jail, the lack of capacity and physical facilities for handling the increasing number of people in the jail with mental health issues, the lack of resources in the community for preventative programs for those with mental health and substance abuse problems, disproportionate presence of African Americans in the jail population, the large number of people in jail for relatively minor offenses, the lack of options for sentencing convicted individuals, and the need for a well-structured pretrial services program to reduce the incarceration of individuals not convicted of a crime. The board took three steps to further examine the desirability and feasibility of expanding the jail, delegating the jail project planning team, issuing an RFP for the needs assessment that is currently ongoing, and appointing the two executive task force to gather information on current programs and costs, and preventing incarceration, reducing recidivism, and promoting the rehabilitation of prisoners, which is what this report is going to go over. We met nine times, and including one meeting where we did not have a quorum. We've met with a number of the stakeholders in the criminal justice system, ranging from the state's attorney. We've had court services in. We toured both of the jails and had a discussion with the sheriff about his operations. And in addition, a number of the people on the task force bring relevant experience from outside of the task force to bear on this, that they were able to bring either their recommendations or the section in the back. And so at this time, we have a number of potential recommendations, because this is just a progress report. This is an advisory body, and we feel there's a lot of work still to be done on this. We have met with the needs assessment consultants, but as this process is going to be ongoing, we think there's a lot more to do, and so this body is asking to be reappointed, because this is the end of its charter right now. So these are preliminary, but at this time we have a number of things that the body has looked at that we think are something that the county board should look at to improve the criminal justice system. And I believe Lynn and Mark can do a little bit of this.
Good evening. I'm Lynn Branham. I am a law professor, and one of my areas of expertise, correctional and sentencing law policy. It is my privilege on behalf of the task force to briefly profile some of the potential recommendations that may be incorporated in the task force's final report. And then we're leaving time open for questions that my fellow task members will be fielding from you. But we did want to underscore that these are potential recommendations. We are going to be reaching out to the stakeholders, criminal justice officials, getting their feedback. We also want to reach out to the public. This is a very inclusive process, and then we'll make further refinements in them. But we wanted to share with you what we've, where we're at now. We invite your feedback, whether now or later. But again, we want you to see, I think, the richness of this endeavor in the sense of its potential. But in the report that's been given to you, it's a progress report. There are 11 potential recommendations. The first two are what we call foundational recommendations. The first one, for example, sets forth the premise that incarceration should really be the last resort, the last option. It recognizes how very costly incarceration is, not only because of construction costs, but also operating expenses. When you're covering medical costs, it's very expensive. And also there are the costs that people like to talk about, but they're very real, and those are the human costs of incarceration. The second potential recommendation would be calling for the integration of what's called restorative justice into the criminal justice system. This isn't the time to get into all the details of restorative justice, but to just give you a flavor for what that means. Criminal justice systems typically have, in recent years, had a retributive focus, mostly focusing on how do we get back at this person, like the person who came into our garage a little over a year ago and took two bites. How can we get back at that person? Because I'm not really happy with that person or person. Restorative justice has a different focus, and the focus is on how can we get those individuals to give back both to the individuals but the community that's been harmed by that. Because when those criminals went and did that, they didn't just harm my family, they harmed all of them because there's a sense of lack of security. So restorative justice is implemented through a lot of different mechanisms. We will be profiling them. We can answer questions about them, but we are recommending that this construct be incorporated in the criminal justice system. Potential recommendation number three is structural in nature. We are recommending, potentially, that there be established a Champaign County Restorative and Criminal Justice Coordinating Council. This kind of structure is in place in many states throughout the country. It's just so very basic, because what happens is you get a diverse group, broad-based group, a judge who handles criminal cases, prosecutor, defense attorney, local law enforcement official, somebody with expertise on mental health issues, several members of the public, and the list goes on. And they get around the table on an ongoing basis, and they ask themselves, how can we make the system work better? So, for example, if the decision is made that this county needs pretrial services, that will diminish the number of people who need to be in jail, you have that body in place that can fill in the details to make that work and work well. I've seen this process, and it is just an amazing and constructive process. The fourth recommendation is going to be profiled by Mark Driscoll, who is the Associate Director of the Champaign County Mental Health Team.
Thank you, Lynn. I'm just stepping in for this one recommendation, but it's actually got some fairly substantial background that is present in the report. Essentially, recommendation four talks about mental health and substance abuse services, substance use disorder prevention and treatment services that needs to be improved, enhanced, further developed within the adult criminal justice system, and essentially looking at the development of a system of care within that system related to behavioral health services. Behavioral health, again, being providing mental health and substance abuse treatment. In terms of the recommendation, the potential recommendation number four, the substance of what that recommendation is looking at is actually fleshed out on page 30. It's the behavioral health services section in the background portion of the report. It begins on page 30. It runs for about 7 pages. It has a series of recommendations, including use of evidence-based practice or models so that the treatment, the services that are provided have proven effectiveness. So long as you fall, if you have fidelity to the model, that you should be able to replicate the outcomes associated with a particular treatment. modality. So that was our very first, specific recommendation. From there, we went on and talked about actually looking at the initial contact of law enforcement with an individual, and then through time that they may spend in jail, and then also reentry into the community. And there's a series of recommendations associated with each area there as far as what the county may look at in terms of what it may choose to implement to provide broad-based and comprehensive services as part of a continuum of care, a system of care. Not only do we provide a series of recommendations, and there's over a dozen of those are here as bullet points, we also provided a brief overview of some existing services that are currently offered. A couple of those are described as alternatives to incarceration, and they are, I think, fairly well-known, the drug court program, and then the much more recent mental health court program. And we provided some detail in terms of how that program is currently functioning, in terms of how it is funded. It seemed to be one of the questions that was asked. And then from there, we take a step farther out and look at services that folks who may be having some interaction with the criminal justice system, that some additional resources that are available to the community. And then finally, just some more broad-based services that exist in the community. I would, qualify the list of services that are presented with, a recognition that there's limited capacity associated with mental health and substance abuse services, and that capacity also extends beyond just those services, but also just general social services in the community. A number of the agencies that are listed are also would have state contracts that have been reduced and so forth. So simply identifying services there does not necessarily mean the capacity is there to accept an influx of clients without an investment of resources. I should say that is not an exhaustive list of resources, and that, and I'm sure Sheila Ferguson and Benita Rollins-Gay, who worked with me on this section, whenever I look at this, I think of something else that should have been included. For example, this evening, I realized we don't have cognition works listed here, and they are a resource that is utilized, but is not on our list. So, and I think that's the extent of my remarks, and Lynn's had a chance to catch her up, and so I'll let her return.
Okay. Potential recommendation number five, we think it is very important because it focuses on what's called a pretrial services program. I would consider that kind of not having a pretrial services program kind of like having a school system without elementary schools. It's very basic, and it's very important because it focuses on people who haven't been convicted of a crime but are in jail. Pretrial services programs perform two important functions that can limit the number of people in jail. One, a screening function using risk assessment tools that can, again, identify people who can be safely in the community. And secondly, pretrial services programs perform a supervision program that, without that component, the individuals might need to be in jail. So again, it would be very helpful for this county we're tendering this as a potential recommendation for us to discuss this further. Potential recommendation number six is calling for the development of a full range of community-based sentencing options and diversion and deferred adjudication options. So more than just probation supervision or the problem-solving courts for jail or prison, but to look at the full range of options. And there's one state that lists 25 options. And for us to look at those as a means of importing cost-effectiveness into the system and promoting the objectives that we were supposed to look at, such as increasing rehabilitation. The task force has not yet identified what would be the implementation priorities for community sanctions. We want to get some data from the consultants. We literally can come into you. We're hoping and say, if you adopt this option, it could take this number of people out of the jail, save you this amount of money. We want to provide you those kinds of specifics, and we've talked to the consultant about that desire on our part. Potential recommendation number 7 focuses on other kinds of programming beyond behavioral health care. So that would be things like job skills development, educational anger management, things like that. Potential recommendation 8 calls for the establishment of a broad-based and diverse racial justice impact task force. That potential recommendation sprang from some concerns that were brought to and expressed to the task force about racial disparities in the criminal justice system. Now, the reality is that is a nationwide issue, and across the country, other communities and states have established special task forces. There's been a lot of work done here, and we think it's important that this endeavor be undertaken, but we do not think that we are the entity to do that. That doesn't fall within our specific charge. We have a very meaty charge you've given us. We look sleep deprived. There's a reason for that. But we also aren't the group because we aren't diverse. But having said that, we think this is very important, so we are putting this out as a potential recommendation. Potential recommendation 9 sounds so basic that there be training of the criminal justice officials, but that is very important because we are talking about taking some new steps in the criminal justice system. People get afraid of change. They understand the change. They know how to effect these changes in the correct way following evidence-based practices. Potential recommendation number 10 focuses on public education. What the public will support, there's just a world of difference depending on whether the public is educated, for example, about community sanctions or not. Once there's all these studies that show once the public's been informed about the cost, the various alternatives, they are very supportive of the kind of potential recommendations that we are beginning to circulate. And the public can also bring ideas to those who are looking at making the system work better and be more cost effective. So again, we think it's important to be inclusive. And finally, potential recommendation number 11 simply recognizes that for the system to work well, cost effectively, for the objectives mentioned to be realized, there have to be performance standards, there needs to be data collected, there needs to be ongoing evaluation. Our report also sets forth some priority tasks that we're hoping the consultant can undertake. There's some observations that have been inserted about funding. There will probably be some state-level recommendations coming out of this group because we realize there's some things that the state will need to do. The county can't do it, and we're hoping that our report can flag some of those areas and maybe we can join with other counties to get the state to do some of the things that we believe it needs to do. So again, we feel we've done a lot of work. I'm just so pleased to be working with a capable group of individuals behind me. We do have a lot of work ahead of us, but our end goal is to develop recommendations that can assist you in making decisions that will serve the best interests of the people in this county, lead to fiscally responsible decisions, and again, let all of these decisions be confident with the housing needs. So again, I was just presenting the recommendations, but
thank you, Amanda. The two things that we heard over and over from our stakeholders were, one, we'd love to have more comprehensive programs, we'd love to have more effective programs, but there's just not the funding. And two, we disagree with a particular policy, but the state forces us to do it, which is why we're planning on having a statewide section for things that could possibly be forwarded to some of our state delegations. Does anybody have any questions for the task force? I think I saw Mr. Killer's hand up first.
Sure, so a couple questions for you, more from a reporting standpoint. This is more of a progress report. When's the tentative deadline for a full comprehensive report? I know it may depend on ILPP, just curious.
When
Well, assuming that the next county board reestablishes this commission, we have already met once with Dr. Kalmanoff and ILPP. Deb, how long do we think that he's going to take? Another 3 months, a week?
The contract is for 25 weeks, and he just started last week.
Yeah. So I think that we're going to want to continue to work with him and broaden this, look at other things for the first half of 2013. Does that sound accurate? We wanted to bring to bear what we've already seen, looking at the operations of the county and what people are already bringing to bear on what they've been working with. But on a lot of these things, we're just getting going. A lot of it's going to be working with ILPP, because on a lot of the numbers that we can use to make recommendations, we don't have those. ILPP is going to be doing that. And the stakeholders themselves don't necessarily have the information that he's going to be looking at. So I would say probably through the first half of 2013.
Okay. So in essence, a lot of the recommendations, while good, they're more anecdotal than anything.
Absolutely. That's why they said potential. We wanted to give people a flavor for what we've been working on, show what are some of the priorities of people on the task force. But he's nothing in this is fine.
And my final comment is number four, mental health and whatnot. Unfortunately, didn't have anything in the back. It just says task force. Will be completed later. I would love to see more details on programs or thoughts or initiatives for number four.
That's what I would like.
It says note to task force something, something, something. Initial recommendation number four says note to task force something, something. We're talking page.
Sure.
But nevertheless, I would like to see a little bit more on that, because it is a really, really good topic and issue to get on.
If I may, at least in copy I have, if you go to page 30.
So this is your supplemental. Is this supposed to be in that spot then?
Yes. Basically, we had potential recommendations. We wanted to highlight, I guess the potential recommendations. And then there is a background section which includes additional information that was prepared by, I'll describe as various teams or various individuals of the task force.
Yeah, starting on page 12, there are reports which have not been passed, and they're not speaking to the whole committee. And one of those is a very comprehensive report on behavioral health services in Champaign County, and recommendations for beefing that up from Mark Fiscal, Sheila Ferguson, and Beanie Wallace on page 13.
Is there, and I apologize, I know I said that was the last one, this is the last one. Anything from the crisis team or any sort of numbers that you have, at least preliminarily, that kind of discuss behavioral health, folks that are in our jail population today? Can you talk a little bit about what do we see today percentage-wise? Maybe you do have those numbers, maybe the way probably be. Just more curious on that.
Do you mean in the average daily census how many people have mental health?
Yes, have mental health issues, especially ones that have to be put away from the general population.
Some of that information may have been provided in background material that we received as a task force. We had a report from Sheriff Walsh that discussed some of that, and then I think there was another consultant report that was prepared that also presented some general information about the census, the population that was within the jail.
We shied away from making this two numbers heavy because we think that's going to be in the ILPP report. When we get that up, we wanted to keep it brief enough that it would be a quick read to get everybody an update. We can certainly say that if the sheriff were here, he would tell you that he would certainly like more and more comprehensive space for holding mentally ill inmates. They told us that, look, we're being used as a mental health facility. We were not built to be a mental health facility. We only have the staff resources to deal with mental health emergencies, and so it's not a great situation, is what he told us and what he would tell you.
Thank you.
Mr. James.
I guess when I was thinking of this advisory board, and I'm looking at a lot of these recommendations, some of them, what are listed here, such as getting more education for those in the field, some of those things have already been looked at, being worked on, heard all that. So I was looking that this report would give us some new ideas and some new focus, like the mental health issue, which we know is out there and well aware, and more focus on what ideals are you going to bring to the table that we can incorporate, not what already is being done, being looked at, because we're just spinning our wheels. Now, there may be some new things in here that you may know about that I don't, but I know there's all, like here, we're in this building right here, there's ongoing training for law enforcement, there's all types of needs. There's, you know, specialty sections that we can never incorporate because you don't want the overlap, because then you might have feelings that get mixed. But I was hoping this advisory board would come to us and say, here's some issues like we've heard about the makeup of the jail. Here's some ways that we have looked at, such as these task force or some other avenues. But some of these recommendations, I would almost say you need to go back and look at it and say, you know what, he's right, it's being studied, it's being done. Let's focus more on the ones that really need some fine-tuning. Because I think you're going to put a lot of effort into some of that. State's attorney already has panels for adult diversion. There's other panels. I mean, there's a lot of things out there, and I thought you all would have had that beforehand before you presented this report to us. Other than that, it's a nice report, as Mr. Peebus always told me, it's put together well.
Absolutely, and that's the kind of thing we're planning to be put up with the next 6 months. And
then we should challenge that. I think we should challenge that.
Okay.
Well, I would just I respectfully challenge that. I think that there's a lot of piecemeal stuff going on. There's some of this, there's some of this, there's some of that. It's not integrated, it's not coordinated. There's no comprehensive vision for how to put it together. This is new. This is cutting edge. Because it puts this stuff together with one group of people who've been busting their behinds on it for quite a number of weeks now with a comprehensive strategy. What you're talking about is somebody over here is doing this, and somebody over there is doing that, and somebody over there is doing that. Is that how you want to invest your money? I think you want to invest your money in a way that has a comprehensive look at the things and uses the research and the strategies that have had research-based an evidence-based impact. And that's what we're going to give you. We're going to give you a real thoughtful assessment of how these things can work together in a comprehensive standpoint instead of the piecemeal thing that's been going on.
And if I may, sir, if you would put that as a recommendation that you want a central area to review all this and funnel it through with the task force, but if you look at your own recommendations, you're creating another task force to look at issues. So when you're telling me that it's piecemeal, I had the same idea you did, that all this would come together. But what I was trying to say is some of these things are being done. If you look at some of your recommendations here, and I didn't want to see focus on that, I wanted to see focus on what you just said.
So, okay, we can address that, I think, in our next
just one other clarification. I mentioned that the task force didn't identify implementation priorities for community sanctions, for example. But I can say we've recognized that we actually have a lot of options that aren't safe. I mentioned pretrial services, but another one, day reporting centers, much cheaper than jail. They come up, they give their itinerary for the day. If it's decided there's some deficits, like a substance abuse problem, they get it right there, but it's a lot cheaper. I personally favor that idea. I also personally favor expanded electronic supervision, which hasn't closely reached its potential. I favor day fines, which you don't pay for supervision periods. We don't want supervision itself, probation's cost. But those are my personal ideas. So we talked about it, but before we brought those to you, the new things, and I understand what you're yearning for because I want to put them in, but again, we wanted to get the number. So you could say, you know what, that day reporting center, that would save us this as opposed to taking this step. So I respect your request for those specifics, and I really want to give them to you, but I also respect the decision of the task force that we want to give you the numbers. So you say, basically, if you're going to say, these are good options. So we'll do it.
Thank you.
Okay?
Well, thank you. There's a number of expanded things in the back. Lynn has an expanded section. Page 30, the mental health has a number of recommendations as well that we didn't go over just now, but are good, solid things that we're going to be expanding on.
I mean, I think also to look at the situation that Bill talked about in terms of the piecemeal approach, we're also talking about looking beyond the point where people are arrested and in jail, that we need
particularly dealing with a mental health issue, we want to be able to look at preventative kind of programs that are going to keep people from being arrested. They're going to keep them outside of the system, and that's part of looking at it in a much broader way. Not simply because to date, most of the discussion about diversion, about alternatives to incarceration, and so forth, has focused on what happens to people once they're already in jail. But we have to be dealing with some of these issues before people get to jail. So that's the kind of thing we're going to be looking at when we adopt a more systemic kind of approach that we'll be able to take when we get to the final document.
Okay. Thank you, Jack. Was it Alex that I saw Holderfield? Does anybody else want to get the last key?
I just wanted to say, thank you to the task force. I was a proponent of creating this and not really sure what we end up with at this point or at the end. And I think so far you guys done a terrific job. What you've done, Mr. James, is I agree with Mr. James' desire to see new proposals come out of this, but I also want to make sure the board's aware that part of the charter was to do an inventory of current options, which would be of use to the consultant. Probably the greatest value that this task force has created is you are going to enable us to get a lot more value out of the consultant than we're bringing in than we would get if he had to come in full and develop the advantage of the research that you've done as a respected provider. So thank you very much for that. I like the fact that there are, and I wanted to sort of concur with your statement earlier about, I think a lot of the things that we need to do, we are doing a lot of things. We are doing some pre-trial triage. We are doing, by everybody but the county board, the state attorney, the judge, the sheriff, the supervisor of jail, public defender. I think the counties, parties in the county who are responsible for this, I think do a fairly good job with limited resources, but I definitely appreciate the recommendation or the direction you're going, which is looking at ways that these things can be more holistic, can be more unified in a way that we ensure that these decisions aren't being made on an ad hoc basis. They're really, that people, everybody comes to the system.
wanted to let you know that the health book and the health book online, the book that we're talking about, is mentioned in here as a resource, that there is a 211 information referral system that's being established. And then I also, when we prepared the program descriptions, we also included family service, and they run the first call for health program. And then up in Rantoul, there's a community service center in Northern Champaign County, which also runs a first call for health program, which is also. I just want to be sure that the folks were aware that that information was not missed. That we did try to provide as as the touchstones in terms of services that are available in the community. And we would be remiss if we did not mention the information referral programs, because if something isn't listed here, the call can be made to those programs and those services can be accessed.
Right, I understand that, but I'd also like to see that that reference with the number of programs that we have. I mean, I think that's part of what we're doing here. I think the number of programs that are already in place. So are there 50 programs, are there 100 programs, are there 200 programs? I think that that's something that, sure, you can get online, but I think you should actually reference the number of programs that we currently have daily.
We're talking about those community resources on page 32. I think that partially gets at what you were looking at. And we agree with you on the juvenile programs. We didn't really think that was a part of our charge. And we agree that it should be extended because you're absolutely right. The data shows that the easiest way to reduce recidivism is to keep children out of the criminal justice system in the first place. Next, we have James, did you still have a question?
I'm just going to add a few more comments. First of all, I want to thank the task force as well for the work that we put into this fair tonight. I guess I had similar questions to what Sam raised, but what I'm hearing is that you're going to defer that work by the R, Chicago D State's correlate your recommendations to what's actually going on. So you're going to let ILP evaluate how much we're going down that path and how much more we can do. Is that fair to say?
I don't think so.
I see these lists in here. What I don't see is a correlation of how any of them relate to the recommendations. And so, how far in that direction are we moving? And more appropriately, how far do we need to go? Right? I don't want to talk about targets or orders or things like that. But there are components that I see in here in the recommendations that we have some modicum amount of. And I'd like to know how far we have to go to do that well. And if you're not going to help us figure out that quantification of where we are on the spectrum, then I'm assuming you're deferring that.
I appreciate
comments.
I'm Sheila Ferguson. I represent NAMI on the task force. NAMI is National Alliance for Mentally Ill. It's made up of family members and those of us who have loved ones with mental illness. I'm also the executive director of Community Elements for Mental Health and Behavioral Health Organization here in town. I just want to make a comment because I think you're all touching on something that certainly I felt over the course of the task force. I think everybody sees the task force as being able to do something very specific from their point of view. And what has been difficult is during the time in which the nominations were being made, NAMI asked me to support their point of view on the adult jail and really around the building itself and how do you best use the money and the resources and what they were seeing amongst their loved ones. So that's how I felt I could contribute. But over the course of this time, more and more questions came to the task force, and I do think that, as it was mentioned earlier, looking at what the charge of the task force is and sort of what the county board expects the group to do would be very helpful to us, because my contribution is to be able to look and see what services and programs that NAMI and my agency and the people that work we were able to start a new program, MRT, which is an evidence-based practice. And that occurred with just a communication at the very beginning of the task force. And the sheriff and the county board, the mental health board, we found some resources to train people and put those in practice. And so I'm mentioning this only because I think that it would be very helpful to know exactly what the county board would like the group to do. And then I know that it's time for you know, us to end and maybe a new task force to start. But then the folks on the task force are perhaps people in the community that could be considered, might be a different group than what you see here today. If we're looking at issues related to race, we might have a different configuration. And you know, in terms of what the county wants, I think there could be some really good work done if we've given just a little bit more guidance about it and allowed to take a look and revisit that.
If I could, I appreciate your comments, but Michael, could you speak to what I'm asking as far as,
I think Lynn's here.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, here's how what we need from the consultant. We hope we get it. And when I say we, I mean the counties. There are risk assessment instruments, and we need those applied to get the risk profile. I've talked to wardens, for example, prisons, and I'll ask them informally, how many people really need to be there? And they'll tell me, usually, it's medium security, not even minimum. They'll say about a third of them could be effectively handled when the community of the right sanctions were there. But that's just informal. To do this properly, you need application risk assessment tools. That's not something we would do. The data, the consultant, if you got the right consultant, will go in there and give us that data. Now, in terms of handing over the recommendations, well, we think you should have a data reporting center. I really don't know what the consultant will do, but the reality is this. Well, what we're looking at right now are the ranger's options in between. Think about it. I think, again, sometimes we have our trouble putting our head around this. Well, think about the medical analogy. Think about if you walked into a hospital and they said, we can do two things for you. We can do cardiac surgery or give you an aspirin. Well, you wouldn't want, that just doesn't work. It's not effective. And so think about all the things in between. And the reality is sometimes three different ones would work well. Maybe the day reporting center would work fine, but actually this 6-month period of intensive supervision is cheaper and actually would work well. A lot of times in the intermediate range. So we will bring recommendations on that. The consultant may also have recommendations. I don't know. I'm hoping the consultant doesn't give you boilerplate. And that's why we have highlighted some priority tasks, because we need some data to complete what I'm hearing you want. But no, I don't see us turning that over. We're going to be listening to the stakeholders. We're going to take the time to talk to the public. And we think we live here. And we've got a lot of people here with a breadth of expertise. And so I think it will be helpful to tender those recommendations to the criminal justice.
I have Bruce and Anne's link. I'm in Michael's. Did I just see Patrice Angela? Anybody else?
Yeah. I think that, you know, the recommendations that we look more broadly and have a more systematic approach, you know, are really helpful. And I mean, a lot of our discussion has been the fact that we're looking at things in a systemic way. So, for example, and this is some of the information that we would get from ILPT to be able to make a systematic approach. For example, we identified the fact that we have an excessive number of people with mental health issues in the jail. We identify the fact that we have people with substance abuse issues. We identify the fact that there's racial discrepancies in the jail population. But how do we connect all three of those? How many African Americans with mental health issues do we have? How many people with substance abuse problems do we have that are in there for traffic tickets? How do we get the big picture of who's actually in the jail so we can identify some of the people that don't need to be there and find other programs and other ways to address those problems? The second thing is that we have recommended the formation of a restorative and criminal justice coordinating council, which is a body to kind of pull everything together and continue to to kind of reconstruct things in a more systematic way. We want to bring all these things together, but it's been a very short period of time to try to develop that kind of vision, to take all the programs that exist, of which there are a lot, and try to figure out a better way that they can fit together in order to more effectively serve the needs of criminal justice and hopefully reduce the demand for jail bed space and the demand for expenditure on jail bed space.
Okay. So we have Brooks and Abbott's laying on my petri acid.
Since all of these things are things that would have to be authorized by the board and paid for by the board, I'd like to see more how the county would participate in these decisions and, if possible, more of a price tag where we could see, you keep saying you're saving money, but a lot of it's going to cost a lot of money, and we really need to know. We're pretty cool.
Carol.
First, I want to thank the task force members for serving, and in a short period of time, trying to come up with a progress report. I attended a couple of the task force meetings and followed the process all the way through. And one of the things that was striking to me is that the time frame was shorter than the research time to get to this point. So I appreciate at least having some progress report. But I think that the overarching issue is the cost of building and housing people in jails, which is a national trend, is costing counties and cities and states millions of dollars, more than they can actually sustain. And so what we have to do in the coming months is look at the big picture. So the short-term solution would be, hey, just build something and be done with this discussion. But the longer-term solution is when you start looking at cost estimates for daily operation after you build that facility, then you say, wow, that was not what we were told. That's more than what we expected. We have to look at the bigger picture, and I think that's what the commission's initial task was. I'll also say that the commission, once this commission or the task force was put together, it wasn't put together to deal with juvenile issues whatsoever, not at all. And it wasn't done that way because it came into discussion because there was a discussion on the floor to build an extension or close our facility and build an extension on our county jail. That's how they came into being. And so their focus was not juvenile. And if the county wants to do something, yes, absolutely look at access and say, hey, all this money over here, why aren't we using it more effectively around the juvenile issue and mental health? You can do that because you have the legislative authority to do that. But in this case, the task force really must get enough time to finish a final report, whether the committee, the county board, uses any of it or not. It needs to complete at least a final report and to make sure that the consultant that we did pay and hire covers all of the resources that we have and get the numbers that you really will need to make a final decision on what to do. But it cannot be done in a vacuum. And not to continue this task force would be a very bad deal because we have these folks who are experts in various fields for $0.
Okay. We have Langer, Michael, Steve, and Carter around. You're on that way. Well, you're on the list. Ralph's up now. Ralph, you had a question?
How can I give you? No.
No? Okay. Well, let's move down the list. Diane?
Just a couple things. I know that you have to start somewhere and starting from scratch. There had to be a lot of things kind of put in place and whatever. I do feel that with the head of this justice and social here, that's your guidance. That's the guy that needs to come back to us and say, look, it's not specific. That's your connection to us to get this down. If it is, when we do have the charter, and if there are things that need to be added to it, that's what I'd like to see come up with. I, too, am specific.
I too would like to see specific areas, and I'll say it once, I'll say it again. There's no rural representation on this. The rural area is Champaign County. We have a city of Urbana, we have a city of Champaign, we've got the village of Rancho Hills, Champaign County. And I'd like to see representation from the county, somebody that is in a rural area that gets served by the county department.
Well, Diane, we have three vacancies that are going to be on this commission for people who are not going to be continuing. And I think that is a great oversight to plug. So.
Well, when I said it the first time, you guys said there was somebody there. I brought it up in the beginning, and it was whoever you picked. And that's good, because I understand there has to be a start somewhere. But I really, really find it fit. I find it actually kind of, we're a minority out there in the rural area, quite frankly, if you want to look at it that way, just like health and everything else. So please, there's a lot of things that happen out in the rural area that these people are going into the county jails.
Okay. Petrie.
Thank you. I'll add my voice to the many who have thanked the task force. I attended every meeting of the task force. So some of the, maybe what you perceive as gaps don't seem so gappy to me, because I really sat there and listened to the process. I didn't participate because I'm not a member of the task force, but I did listen. And I also had the opportunity to attend the task force when the consultants conversed with them. And I was very excited to listen to that dialogue and what the potential is that can come out of a collaborative but parallel effort between both the task force and the consultants. So I say that to encourage, both of those are going to be on the next board, to encourage the next board to vote to continue the task force. If in fact the board does think that their charge should be broadened, then let's do that. The charge was to focus on adult inmates, not juvenile delinquents. That does not mean that they did not discuss juvenile delinquents, but they kept reminding themselves that our charge is X, and it is not within our domain to expand the charge. Okay, I don't disagree. You know, that's a very important focus. Another aspect that they expressed concern about was listing programs, and you all pointed out they didn't list all of the programs. And one of the major concerns is, well, if we list all of these programs, we think everything's solved in our community, and we don't need to do one other thing. But that goes back to the questions that everybody's raised about the need for data. Because we could have 100 programs and maybe only 10 of them are really, truly effective in the end result and also cost effective in getting to that end result. So I do think we need to give both the task force and the consultant, when that individual comes back, and I guess he likes to be called Cal, so I'll refer to him as Cal. As Cal gets more and more data sent to him, which he's asking to be done by all kinds of entities within our community, and he looks at what's happening, I think we can have the chance then to start wrapping our heads around these numbers that we all want to. I mean, I've wanted to from the very beginning to see what the large end might be for a program and then what is the smaller end that actually gets it to a program, because maybe this will help us redefine how we are spending our monies, not that we increase the amount spent, but redirect how we are spending all our monies, because Astra mentioned we don't have extra monies to put into the pot, but maybe we can redirect those. So this was a rare group of individuals that we were so fortunate to get who wanted to work on this, and we appointed them to this task force, and I'm truly impressed with the hours they've spent wrestling with the issues, and I hope that you all can appreciate that. You probably feel a gap between the fact that you haven't been in all the conversations and you just the final report, and they really, really, really worked hard at making this a progress report to say, this is where we're at, we're listening to you now, and we'll go back and take the next step in this progress report. This isn't a final report. They really wanted to start the conversation. Thank you.
Hi, Julian Rappaport. I just want to say a couple of things. First of all, maybe it's obvious by now, this report is intended to be a progress report on purpose. So from my point of view, what we're hearing is very informative and useful for the task force. I think we'll have a better understanding of the kinds of concerns that county board members have. I want to say, just as a side comment here, I was the president of the county board of health for 5 years. I was on it, and you know, I'm worried about the county. I want the county to
say that, and I appreciate that, and I understand you're there for a specific purpose because you got that background. But I also would like to see some rural representation because there are a lot of rural people.
I understand, and that's entirely up.
So that's totally different.
That's entirely up to you who gets appointed.
And Julie does.
But that's not what I'm here. The main thing I want to comment on here, besides appreciating the feedback, although there's a little bit of, I'm not exactly sure what's in the air here. But short of commenting on what's in the air, you have a lot of services in Champaign County. There, you can make a list that's very long. And that's not the same as services that are accessible and useful to the target population that you are concerned about when you're talking about the people who end up in the county jail. So there's one of the problems that you're going to, I think we're going to discover, is that having a lot of services isn't the same as having an integrated set of services, and it isn't necessarily the same as getting the people who need the services to the services. So the problem of access is going to be real. And one way that you can start to think about this is that, and it's a perfectly reasonable question to say, can we afford whatever I'm going to say? I'm going to say one of the things that I think you're going to discover, I have no idea what the consultant's going to say. It'll be interesting to see how that meshes with what we're saying. I hope you'll encourage the consultant to keep talking to us. But one of the things that a system needs like this, and it's done in lots of places, I think are people called case managers. That is, that someone that takes responsibility for assisting the individuals who need the services, not simply by referral and hoping they show up, but by actually figuring out how to track them into the system and get them connected to the services that they need. Now, that wouldn't be free. That is, if one had case managers, you'd have to pay people. I think what you would discover is that if you have an effective case management system that moves people to the services they need and assist them in figuring out how to get there. Sometimes people want to reject the services that are available. So sometimes they need particular kinds of encouragement to get there. If you have a system that is attempting to do that, I believe what you're going to discover, and I think that the consultant's data will verify this, what you'll see is that as people are case managed so that they get to the services they need, the need for jail services is going to go down. So with a relatively small investment, there's a high likelihood that you're going to gain, you're going to spend less money for more expensive services. Now, you know, we haven't detailed all that yet because we're in the process of thinking about this. But just to give you some general idea of the way that we're thinking. So when we're talking about a coordinating council, that's part of what we have in mind. And there's a lot of operational details that have to be worked out, of course. But that's the way we're thinking. So, thanks.
Okay. Lloyd, you're up. And I don't have any home appeals for Ms. Alex. I also wanted to ask second round questions. Lloyd, did you have anything?
Yeah. And I'm going to be brief because
getting bed. But thank you all. I know you're trying to do something. But listen at the old man. We live a bit too high. We need to start down with the path. See, when these guys get up in jail, they gone. Their mind is so messed up, you can't tell them nothing. Now, we didn't. And I was raised up right here. And now the police were walking. They didn't have cars. They were walking the street. And we were playing out there in the street. And no. Now, you need to work with the parents and give the parents the authority to raise some good children before they get the devil. Because when they get the devil, you've got to spend a whole ton of money, and I don't think you can change their mind. They're so messed up. And that's a sad thing. And I've been talking to them judges, law enforcement. Why is it that when I was growing up, you couldn't walk the street anytime you want to? You had curfew. Then if your parents got them on your butt, wasn't threatened to take them to jail. You got some parents so afraid till they just turn the kids loose and just let them go kaput. That's why you're getting all these bad kids and doing like you do whiskey. Some people, somebody always gonna do something wrong. Those are the ones you punch. But you got more good parents that would raise their kids if you give some assistance. That's what's wrong with the system. And what more, I'm gonna get off because I know people want to go home. Why is it that we put mental patients in jail houses? Why aren't they in facilities where you can tend to them properly? When you get in a jail house, your mentality even leaves. You think that you're being treated cruelly. And the mental patient shouldn't be in the jail house.
During this meeting. But I guess in a kind of a summary, from
facilities is retired, we'll have additional money to spend in the form of public safety sales tax revenues. And the whole point of this exercise is determining how the program will fund. The funds are already spending, and the funds we may be able to spend through the retirement building bonds in a way that administers justice most effectively, most fairly, and at the most greatest value of the taxpayer. And this task force started, this came out of the county board struggling with the question on how to deal with conditions at the downtown jail, what our long-term plan is for that. This has a lot more to do with whether or not to build. This has to do with how we spend half of the county's annual budget, and that's something. And so I think we need to be very careful with the county board to not say, you know, all this recommendation is great, but we're going to put it on a shelf because, you know, we're not making money. We have plenty of money to spend on this problem. The question is, are we spending it in the most effective manner now? And are there improvements that we can make to the way we're spending it that will increase the value of the taxpayer? So I just want to say, we definitely need to approach it from that point.
Okay. I was going to ask Mr. Chair if we can move this along. I think we're starting to hear the second thing go around again. And, it seems like our discussion is longer than the report.
Absolutely. We have two more questions, and of course, we can continue this discussion after this meeting tonight.
Thank you.
Tom and Astrid have both raised their hands.
I'm actually very pleased and glad to see here tonight. I'm very surprised in some respects that a group is able to get this much done that quickly. Given a very vague charter for lack of better word, it's not easy to hold anything like that together. For me, who I've been in the criminal justice system for 32 years, and what that involves is other aspects of it. I see nothing here that's actually brand spanking new in terms of fielding of criminal justice. Many of these are programs that have existed for a long time in other communities, some of them exist in various forms here. We're not breaking a lot of new ground in terms of alternatives to incarceration. Restorative justice is a relatively recent phenomenon at institutionalized bureaucracies, which have done come at some instances. It is not without its problems. There is a blowback to all of these alternatives. I think that one of the things that board needs to do and the various committees that I met with the ILP today, and one of the questions he asked me is, do you think, Mr. Betts, that there is a role for punishment? And you know what? I think there is. And that may be very unpopular in terms of this report. But I think we need to recognize that there is a role for punishment. It is a role for detention. It can be overused severely. I agree. But I think we need to recognize it is a factor. It can be a deterrent. It can protect the community from folks that are very dangerous. And I think that beyond philosophical scope of the committee to address the role and functions of punishment in contemporary America, but I think you do need to recognize that out there in the larger community, there are folks, and I don't think whether you're Urbana, Champaign, Rantoul, rural, unincorporated Champaign County, or Timbuktu, there is a very deep, profound element that believes in the idea of punishment. It is as ancient as any concept that we have in Western or Eastern culture, for that matter. Don't underestimate its function, its overuse, and its underuse. It's there. It's very real. I think I happen to be a person who believes it is overused in many instances, but I don't want us to take the view of it's inappropriate in all instances. As a person who sits in court and sees people while they are out on bail, committing other crimes, while they are in probation, and getting tons of under services, by the way, that cost thousands and thousands of dollars, they're committing more crimes. While they're in court supervision, they're committing more crimes. They're back in court, having just been released from the state prison on parole and committed another crime, even though they're getting tons and tons of services while they're on parole. Let's not underestimate the fact that simply having folks the ideal way to do it. But let's not underestimate that that is a real factor out there, and I think it would be very difficult to have people buy into the notion across the board that we are going to be able to massively reduce jail populations. I think we can do some, and I think we should work toward that. I think it's a laudable goal, but don't underestimate the role and function of deterrence and punishment.
Okay. Ask her, and then can we get a motion to have this placed on file?
When they're getting the information about the jail, I think one of the important things to get is how many of them are convicted and how many of them have pleaded their cases. Because it's the huge increase in plea bargaining that has enabled this huge prison industrial complex that we've developed. I mean, since 1970, it's gone up enormously. And it's from plea bargaining, the courts couldn't begin to handle it. So I'd like to know how many are plea bargaining and what kind of prisons are plea bargaining. I cannot imagine people being in jail for a loud car and jaywalking, and I don't think any jury would have committed them. And I think, are these public defenders under pressure to plea bargaining the state?
Kuzumberry, Evans, any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all in favor say
aye.
Aye. All against. Okay, that passes. Thank you, board, for your comments. Thank you, task force, for all your work. Next, we have on the agenda a report by Jenny Putnam on the Jury Service Commission.
I would like.
Next session.
Of the advisory committee will be for the next life of this committee to date. And I think that probably what I'm going to talk about is not new to you, because there has consistently been one member of the advisory committee who has been the chair of the Justice and Social Services Committee. If you turn to this page that shows the membership most recently, I believe that Matt Gladney, when he was chair of the Justice and Social Services Committee, was fairly regularly making reports. And I believe that since Michael Richards has become that chair, he has been making reports too. So just to sum up what we've done, Chair Weibel asked me to break it down into what are the things that we've managed to do and what are the things that remain to be completed. One thing that was important, we felt, was to revise the juror qualification questionnaire. This is the document that is sent to prospective jurors to kind of whittle down whether or not they would be eligible to serve. And for decades and decades, there were questions on the juror qualification questionnaire that we believe discouraged some prospective jurors from even answering. There were questions such as, have you or a close family member ever been involved in an auto accident? Or are you or a close family member currently charged with committing a criminal offense? We felt that some people have reading those questionnaires, they said, you know what? I don't think I want to go any further. I don't think this is something I'm interested in. Or are you or a close family member on probation or parole? Or have you or a close family member been a victim of crime? Judge DeFanis, who was a consistent, regularly attending member of our committee and attended all of the meetings, he ruled, no, we don't have to ask those questions on a juror qualification questionnaire. Those might be questions that could be answered in court during voir dire questioning. But when we're trying to assemble a team of representative men and women of Champaign County, we could do without those questions. So in the revised questionnaire, questions that might alienate some prospective jurors have been eliminated. And we did other things to try to make that qualification questionnaire more user-friendly. In addition, Judge DeFanis, with a little group editing and teamwork, wrote letters to the prospective jurors, and I've included the two letters in the material that is before you. I'm very pleased that the first letter stresses that your participation ensures that trials are decided by a jury of one's peers, the foundation of the American justice system. And his letter is worded with respect and it's diplomatic and it thanks the citizens in advance. This letter wasn't always sent with the juror qualification questionnaire, and I'm pleased that it has been. A second letter was sent. We get a lot of non-response to the juror qualification questionnaire. So at the urging of the committee, Judge DeFanis drafted a second letter, and it's also written in a respectful tone. You want to take a look at the three paragraphs there. But he does stress that your failure to complete and return the questionnaire may result in your prosecution for indirect contempt of court. He's getting stern, but he's reminding people, we really need you to sign this. You've got a pre-stamped envelope. Please return it. Now, I'm a person who doesn't like to waste one side of the paper, so I included this just because I didn't want to send a blank page. But this is an example of what Judge DeFanis decided not to do. This is a judge in Kankakee County who decided to get tough with scoff laws. But Judge DeFanis' reasoning is, I don't want to arrest my jury into the jury box. So I happen to approve of Judge DeFanis' technique of putting on willing jurors, 12 willing men and women, and an alternate, not people who've been busted into the jury box. You'll see the announcement that pretty much sets out what our mission was. The inspiration for the seating of the committee had always been based on the reports that were the collaboration between the League of Women Voters and the child advocacy class at the College of Law. And year after year after year after year, as a member of the Justice and Social Services Committee, we would read the reports that indicate that we have underrepresentation of persons of color on our juries. And again, that was to do something about this was the impetus for the formation of this advisory committee. Regarding our accomplishments, we have distributed the two different pamphlets. That one is, well, they're just, they differ in their wordiness and the exact audience that they're targeted to. But these are available at public information kiosks, at Douglas Library. We need to have them at the community service facility of Northern Champaign and Rantoul. Thank you for reminding me of that. This is in the city halls. This is in barbershops, the places where people gather. I see some ACLU members here with whom I sat at Champaign-Urbana Days at Douglas Park. We have this brochure to talk to our target audience. And this was made possible also through a grant from the County Bar Association and in conjunction with the Illinois State Bar Association. We're very grateful for their support and making it possible for us to publish these brochures. We have public service announcements. I've included the script of one of them that was in the voice of Patrick Thompson. Aaron Ammons had some very powerful public service announcements. He wrote a poem, I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6, that was very moving. These were played on radio station WAF, WDWS, WBCP, but please to have that public service announcements in use. Then Aaron and Judge Stefanis were the most effective speakers bureau, the two of them. They were invited to be on the Penny for Your Thoughts show. Eventually, we had a six-month run on WBCP on the first Saturday of each month on the Straight Talk Live show. We had a full hour. WBCP also ran promotions during the week, reminding people of rights and responsibilities of jury service. Patricia Avery hosted some of those shows, and different people would be guests, the public defender, Roger Holland, people who had the experience of being on the jury would talk about their experience. But it helped get people in the community talking about jury service. And another accomplishment was the passage just over a year ago of House Bill 2066. I like to think of it as the more representative juries bill that was introduced on our behalf by Representative Naomi Jacobson. And the way things go through the legislature, it was carried through by Mike Frere. It happened to have been passed unanimously. And boy, did I get high on that. I'm of the age that I remember the Schoolhouse Rock show. And I don't know if you remember Schoolhouse Rock, teaching kids ABCs, and there's a little song about My Name is Bill. I went to the Hill, and I became a law. We were thrilled to actually have legislation passed that adds one more category of persons who might be summoned when we're creating the jury pool. If you look at this page of the twofold brochure under the master list, it points out that effective with January 1st of this year, the list also includes anyone who has applied for unemployment benefits with the Illinois Department of Employment Security. This is just one more pool of good addresses. By good, I mean if we send a juror qualification questionnaire, it will go to a live person at a real address and thereby make it easier for us to summon a qualified pool of prospective jurors. I guess the final mark of how effective we were came in the most recent Port Watch report. The Port Watch report is this year, it's 8 pages, but I just included in the handout page 1 and page 8, and I circled the part that I'm most pleased about. For the first time ever since the Legal Women Voters and the students in the trial advocacy class, for the first time ever, the expected participation by African American jurors is not underrepresented. So eventually, something has paid off. Communication in the community, having seen role models who not just talk about, but walk the walk of responding yes when they receive the summons to appear in court. It's very, very gratifying to see that this has had some effect. On the final page of the Court Watch report, see, Professor Beggett has cited the Citizens Advisory Committee on Jury Selection as having contributed to the ongoing positive changes. So we're very, very gratified with this. Where will it go from here? You folks will decide. I've spoken with Katie Blakeman, and she's enthusiastic about the work of such an advisory committee. My concern is that if the committee stops its efforts, if the public service announcements don't continue, I'm not optimistic about what will happen if the work continues. But with Katie's enthusiasm, like maybe it's something that her office would like to support. I hope so. Have questions for me?
Does anybody have any questions for Jenny?
Well, don't we need to move and place the report on file first and then have questions?
Is that a motion?
That is a motion.
Second. Jim James and Beth Burson, second. Quisenberry. Is there any discussion? Do we have any questions on the report for Jenny?
I guess I'll make a comment, Jenny. I think what you're doing is well, and you've served that. But when you brought up about school, I wasn't fortunate enough. My parents were so menial jobs that we didn't have TV when I was younger. But most of the things I learned, I did have TV. Most of the things I learned was in school. And I think that we really, you know, all these things that I hear all the time, and it's great, but you just said if we don't continue the efforts, you may be a little bit dismayed. But it should be our civic duty. I mean, we shouldn't need people telling us all the time, these are the things to be a good citizen. And we need to take a deep breath and say, where are we failing overall? And Lloyd has alluded to that several times, and I agree with him. It's not for all of us to always beat people over the head and say, here's the right thing to do. They got to want to do it. So that's my point.
Any other questions or comments on this section? All in favor of putting this report on file, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That passes. Next we have Section C, the monthly reports.
I'll make an omnibus motion to place all of them, receive and place on file.
We have an omnibus motion to put that on file. Holderfield, second that. Are there any questions or comments on the monthly reports of the agencies? All in favor of putting those on file, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say that passes. This chair's report this month, I think we pretty much covered everything the Justice System does tonight. We do not need to be on the agenda. We're on to the regular meeting. That concludes justice. Thank you.
Okay, last but not least, we have item number 9, finance. And with that, we invite Dan to take the podium and give us the treasurer's report. Dan?
Good evening. My reports are available on the treasurer's webpage. But I do want to make two comments about that, two items that are in the report. You may remember in April 3rd, 2012, the public safety sales tax loan general corporate fund, $1 million. I'll let you know that last week we paid that loan back. Secondly, I want to recap the tax sale, which is the end of the real estate here for us. Back in May, we sent out bills totaling $285 million. final collection percentage this year was 99.94. So only $159,000 was not collected, most of that being bankruptcy. A tax sale, one of my jobs, I believe, is to conduct a tax sale, protects the tax buyer, taxpayer, I should say. And if you're familiar with Madison County, they've had some problems with the FBI's are investigating now. Now their tax rates from tax buyers were as high as 18%, which the average is 18%. That's the highest that it could be. It could be as low as zero. In Champaign County, our average rate was 3.09. So I think they did a good job there. So I would ask that my monthly report be received in that place on file.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Yes. Any questions?
I just want to thank you for sitting for 2 hours until your turn came up. And maybe the new board to figure out ways so you don't always have to wait so long.
Appreciate that. I don't mind waiting. I also have 3 resolutions tonight. This comes before the board on occasion, maybe 2 or 3 times a year. The issue are mobile homes. These are mobile homes that are not to pay taxes, went to a tax sale, no tax buyer purchased them. So then they go through a redemption period of 2 years, and the county, in effect, takes title to them, and they're deeded out. They're a sealed bid. Somebody was interested in buying, they come in on a bid of $695. That's the case with these three mobile homes. Someone decided to pay the minimum bid and put them back on the productive rolls of taxes. So the approval for all 3 to be handed over to the people that want the bills.
Can I get an anonymous vote motion for all 3? Max? So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Any questions? Thank you, Dan, for your report. Auditor's report. Can I get a motion to be placed on file?
So moved.
He's not here today. Carol moved it. Both Stephanie seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. Any questions? Item C, budget amendment transfer. Item number 12-64 from the general corporate fund. Item number 42 from the coroner. Appropriation of $1,513. Revenue increase will be $1,513. State paid stipend to county officials. Move the approval by Aaron and second by Gary Maxwell. All those in favor?
Questions?
Yeah,
on page 23 of the minutes from last month, I had made a motion to approve due to salary stipends paid by the state. It was $2,387. Now I'm seeing this one. Is there a decrease in that?
Actually, this is an increase. The coroner just had the wrong figure when he presented the amendment last month.
Boy, I'm busy since Christmas. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, are there any further questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. The second handout, item 10C2, budget amendment and transfer. Budget amendment 12-66 from the general corporate fund, -22, county clerk, appropriation of $2,686. Revenue, none from fund balance to cover payout on comp, personal, and vacation due to John Parney. Carol moved it, second by Ron. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. Any questions? Bear with me. It's been a long time. Brandon's done an excellent job. He left me on the hook. Okay. Item number 3, budget amendment 12-67, general corporate fund -22 from the county clerk's office. Election assistance and accessibility 2022 from the county clerk, appropriation $13,273. It's a revenue increase of $13,273 to reimburse 80-22 for poll book related expenses that are reimbursable for grant funds. Can I get a motion?
Motion
by Diane, second by Gary. I can't see that far. Any questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. And the last one, and thank you for bearing with me, budget amendment 12-65 from the library, law library. Appropriations of $850. Revenue is none. Fund balance to cover increased personnel costs. Can I get a motion?
So moved.
Second. Moved by Stan, second by Lloyd. Questions?
I guess I'm confused. I was under the impression that we were no longer going to be funding, and I could be wrong, if maybe you can address this, law library.
No, you're thinking of the Land of Lincoln Legal Assistance Project. The law library is a county fund and continues to be funded.
Okay, all those in favor?
Apache.
It is the result of the AFSCME contract having been negotiated mid-year, which resulted in an increase that was not part of the original budget. You dealt with this for all general corporate fund departments with budget amendments that you did back in April. The law library fund just had one part-time person, and they thought they would wait till the end of the year just to make sure they needed it before asking for the amendment.
Thank you very much.
Great. Are there any further questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. Item D, Sheriff's Report. I believe we have one item for approval, number two.
There's two items for approval.
Two items for approval. Okay, the first one is a renewal of the agreement for inmate health care services at the Champaign County Jail.
Second.
Moved by?
Mosier
and second by Jeff Keebler. Any questions? Harold?
Do you know if the sheriff let this out again, or he's just trying?
No, this is an extension of an existing contract that is allowed by the terms originally when it was let out for proposals.
Any further questions?
I have two from the CC. Well, one isn't a question. If my memory is correct, that this is the second amendment on the original contract?
No, this is the Phelps.
Oh, this is, I'm sorry, I'm on the wrong one. Sorry.
Jeff?
What's the net impact of this change? Is there going to be between increase by much over lunch time?
This is a CPI increase, and I'm sorry, the CPI on this one was somewhere between 2.1 and 3. I don't remember exactly what it was. But it's part of the agreement that the services would increase by the CPI.
It's reflected in
the
current year's, or next
it's
year's budget.
In next year's budget. He budgeted for this increase in the 2013 budget.
Thank you. Just checking.
Next one. That's one of my questions.
Okay. Move approval?
You've got a motion.
Pardon?
You have a motion. You just need a vote.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. Item number two, approval of amendment number two to the operating agreement for the inmate food services.
So moved.
Moved by Aaron, second by Stephanie. Any comments, questions?
No. This is the second amendment to that original agreement. Is that written?
I believe that's correct.
Is this a normal pattern with this company?
I'm sorry, I can't answer that question. I mean, this is an agreement that the sheriff and the county has with this vendor, and it's an extension of the current agreement to continue providing these services.
And is the increase across, you know, the sheriff's budget?
It is budgeted for next year in the 2013 budget.
Further comments, questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Good. Item number E, or item E, county administrator.
Okay, you have the budget projection reports at your desk this evening, and I will be very brief. The revenue picture is looking substantially the same, which is still solid when you consider, when you look at that one line halfway down where we received $500,000 of this year's money in last year's budget, and we're now projecting that our revenue will be a shortfall of about $420,000. Overall, that's fairly healthy. We're very definitely underperforming in general government, which is our fees revenues, anticipated to come in at $364,000 less than what was originally budgeted this year. We have accounted for that in the 2013 budget, so the fees budget will not be as large as 2013. Expenditures are going up as we get closer to the end of the fiscal year, more than they have in the last couple of years, so that right now what looks like we will underspend in personnel, probably overspend in commodities, and underspend in services for a total underspending of $500,000, but we would be spending 98.5% of the total expenditure budget as it stands today. And in summary, it looks like, based on the projected, that we should still end this year revenue positive, which is a very good thing, but at less than what we have been seeing in previous monthly reports, where it would only be revenue positive by about $57,000. Still ending with a fund balance total of 13.17%. We subtract out the nursing home outstanding loan, and the fund balance is at 12.1%, which is very close to our fund balance goal. The budget change report is also presented for your information, and I would just ask, unless you have questions, that these be received and placed on file.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by James and second by Carol. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. And items, let me see here. Other business? There's none?
Oh, I'm not done.
Oh, you're not done?
No, no, no.
Here you go. Both awesome.
The next item is something that you approved under policy this evening, and that is the approval of the reclassification of the lead tax extension specialist position to grade range I to be effective on December 1st. And I would ask for the Finance Committee's recommendation to the County Board to enact that.
So moved.
Moved by Aaron, second by, who's that one? Ron. Any questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, the next item is also something that you dealt with under policy tonight, and that has to do with the municipal aggregation fee. This is a recommendation to the Finance Committee that you do specify where that revenue will be deposited and how it will be spent. And you can see the recommendation there is that the fee would be deposited into the county's capital asset replacement fund to be used explicitly for energy efficiency improvements for the county's facilities.
So moved.
Move by Quisenberry, second by Esther. Any questions?
Well, I just got a comment. I see what you've written here, Deb, about energy systems and everything, but could we not include that to include doors, windows, and roofs?
When we say energy efficiency improvements, I think it covers anything that will improve the energy efficiency of the building.
Okay.
It could be a roof. It
okay.
could be,
window
yeah,
doors.
Exactly.
I just want to make sure because I know Patsy will argue with me.
Jeff?
One of the things I'm concerned about is, again, trying to come up with that $90,000 fund that's just sitting there. It sounds like it's explicitly used. Just want to confirm there's no way, shape, or form that anybody can use this fund for anything else, right? That verbiage means it's absolutely crystal clear it cannot be used for any other fund, correct?
Unless you, the county board, authorize it that it be used for something else. And so I would also say that the $90,000 is estimated, so we will make sure that we tie that line item of revenue to actual expenditure that correlates to it. And you'll see it. You won't see this in 2013. Probably in 2013, if we're collecting it, all we'll do is collect it. And then in 2014, based on what was collected in 2013, we'd probably ask you to appropriate that in 2014. That's kind of what we do with the public safety sales tax as well, so that what was collected in the previous year is appropriated for expenditure in the ensuing fiscal year.
Are there any further comments, questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. Item number five.
Is the annual tax levy ordinance for your approval.
Moved by Tom Betts, second by Ralph. Any comments, questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Item number six, annual budget.
Okay, so now you have the annual budget and appropriation ordinance, and I have a brief presentation, which I'll be happy to skip if you don't want to see it. You have the handouts before you this evening, or I can quickly go through it. This is to approve the 2013 budget, which will then go to the county board for final approval. And the only thing I would ask is that if anyone wants to change it, please, that you would do this tonight. If you have any intent to change it, that you not wait until November 27th to do that.
Moved by Tom, second by Ralph. Jeff?
So my big concern is, of course, we budgeted for the Champaign County Nursing Home revenues for the dialysis system, and from what I'm understanding, it's the RFP for that has not been doing so well. What is the net impact of that, and should we be adjusting the budget for CCNH to account for that change? Or can we adjust the budget for CCNH to account for that change?
Quite frankly, in many of your department budgets, we budget for what we expect, and if that doesn't happen, then we don't spend and we don't receive accordingly. And particularly with the nursing home fund, I'm fairly confident that if you want that budget to be amended, there are other unknowns with regard to that budget. And it's very difficult to be, 100% specific, but if you want that to be taken out, I can't do that. That would have to be prepared and presented to you by MPA because I don't know specifically everything that was included. But I would expect that they anticipated some fairly significant expenditures, and if the expenditures don't occur and the revenues don't occur, at the end of the day, the budget probably doesn't need to be amended at this point to address where it will really end up in next fiscal year. The other thing is I don't think it's been 100% ruled out that that will not occur. I think that, that's something that's still being evaluated by MPA. So I completely did not answer your question probably,
but
I'm telling you that that's not the only budget within this $113 million that has things in it that may or may not come true.
Oh, I would agree. And that's also shown in this year's budget where
right.
We're supposed to project a budget at a loss, but we're going to have a gain.
Right, right.
I understand that completely. It's just we're right now forecasting a $1.4 million loss next year, and this will increase that by, I think, rough math, $500,000 for next year. So you're talking a significant boost in our negative variance, as it's listed on page 7. So I just want to make sure that we're cognizant of that. That we're going to be facing a net loss. So when looking at other programs and things that we've accepted, we also have to take into account we're going to lose potentially $500,000 on the nursing home. So.
Well, and I guess I don't know for sure that that's accurate, but the bottom line is that is going to be an impact to the nursing home fund, and it's separated from most of the other funds. I could ask and see if they would estimate what the impact of not having renal dialysis is on the overall budget, and just provide that to all of you as soon as I can get it.
If you could, because that parlays directly into the resolution of the tax anticipation notes and their overall cash flow and things that we do for the nursing home that we have to keep doing just to make sure that it's being able to operate efficiently. And this is just one more thing that I think we just need to be on the ball about for next year.
Completely understand.
I had
Carol, and then I'll pass it.
Deb, I know you wanted the information for changes to the budget before the 27th, is that correct?
That's correct. Actually, you need them tonight. I mean, because...
Well, I have some concerns, and I just... I don't want to do what might happen to this board meeting if I start going through each of those departments and saying I think we should cut 6% from these departments.
You can't do that. You will not be able to do that on November 27th because you have to know that that's the last day, effectively, unless this board wants to hold a special meeting on November 30th, that you can adopt a budget. And when you adopt a budget, you need to know the total dollar revenue and the total dollar expenditure that you are appropriating with the adoption of that budget. So if you've looked at the budget online, you see how many documents are involved.
I do. I have them all in the box.
Yeah. So if you want to amend the fiscal 2013 budget, you've had it since September. If you want to amend it, I would suggest that this really should be the last meeting at which you would try to amend it and expect to have it presented to you in a manner in which you can adopt it at the November 27th board meeting.
Well, I do know that in some instances, budgets are not adopted when you really want them to, because you have to look at, as I think what was brought up by Mr. Kibler, and I think it's true, that we should not pass a budget with a negative variance in the beginning when you can look at balancing that budget now as opposed to expecting some massive deficit and not including other deficits that you may receive in 2013 from state fiscal problems and all of these other issues that you've not considered. So to pass a negative budget doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me when you can't cut it. And I understand I've had them for a while, but I also was on medical, and I haven't had an opportunity to be in this discussion with these board members. But those who may have already done this, maybe you should be looking at how you can have a balanced budget now instead of having a negative budget starting the beginning of the year.
If I may address that, the $1.37 million deficit is addressed in this presentation that you had before you tonight. And quite frankly, the portion of that deficit that is identified with RPC, that is standard procedure for the Regional Planning Commission. They overbudget. And quite frankly, they really need to because they manage hundreds of grants that have crossover fiscal years. And in order, so they budget a contingency just to give themselves some flexibility in case one grant comes in greater than another or expenditures occur in a different fiscal year than were originally anticipated. That's $405,000 of the deficit. If you look back historically, you would see that the Regional Planning Commission does not spend more than it takes in. Tort immunity, which has been pointed out to you, is an area of concern. We definitely do not have enough property tax revenue to cover what the actuarial study says is required for expenditure for tort immunity. But you've also seen in this presentation and in previous presentations that tort immunity is in a combined fund with self-funded insurance. And at the same time that tort immunity's fund balance has been going down, self-funded insurance is a bit going up, so that the combination of the two funds, we're at our goal for self-funded insurance. And those two funds work together to create our self-funded insurance. So there's that shortfall is addressed by that explanation. The balance of the shortfall, $585,900, is money basically for capital projects that you have within reserves that have previously been established for actual expenditures that will occur in 2013. So, again, that is within your definition of balanced budget. I would not necessarily consider that a deficit. Some year you will have more in revenue that you because you sometimes receive revenue that you will expend in future years. So that's the explanation of that $1.37 million negative variance. And with the exception of tort immunity, I really don't think that you would expect that you will end in a negative position if this budget plays out as budgets have in the past.
Yeah, I'd like to carry on with what Mr. Keebler brought to our attention. And if this budget gets passed at the county board meeting here in November, what prevents you from bringing an amendment to us in, say, January with the nursing home and the DIIL?
Nothing. That's exactly what should happen. And can happen. If you want to adjust the budget when you have more concrete information, you typically don't do budget amendments to decrease budgets, but it's been done. It's what we did in 2009. We decreased expenditure budgets based on anticipated decreases in revenue. It's part of the reason you get this general corporate fund report every month so that you know where we think we are, because if it starts looking like we're going to have a large deficit, we need to decrease the expenditure budget to match what's going on with revenue. And yes, through this budget process, that's clearly the next step. You have the ability to amend budgets after they're adopted. It takes two-thirds vote, but you can do that.
Okay, and so if the recommendation is that we do this in January, is that realistic in relationship to going back to the nursing home board to have that conversation with them?
Yes. I mean, I to at least have a better assessment of where renal dialysis services is, yes.
I'm just going to say, I deal with budgets and always have, and with the House Authority, we make plans for capital improvements and that, and if our funding doesn't come through, we just don't do it. So that's money you didn't spend, and yet you got no revenue on the other hand for the funding. And all these are assumptions. I mean, we could end up with a heck of a sales tax decrease, and then we're going to have to adjust as we go along. But I think what Deb is saying, this was all based on historical data and assumptions. And if you want to start messing with it right now, we're at the 12th hour. We got to pass it, get it moving. But if things don't come in, we can always adjust it. We'll have to adjust it. The money isn't there unless we go out for some revenue enhancement bonds. We're all just going to be hurt, and no one's going to give us that. So I would say we do need to move on it. And you got some good questions, but again, we've had plenty of time, but who knows? And who, this other thing may fly. I don't personally think it will, but it may fly.
Are there any further questions, Carol?
I can say it four times we've had to do that in the time I've been here. When we got recessions in 2001, we had to do it. We had to do it in the 90s one time, and we had to do it in an earlier in the early 90s when we had a recession. Every time that happens, you've got to look at this because your income's going to change. When you get a big plunge like we had in 7 or 1 or 94, we had to do it. There wasn't any way to get around it. And came in and cut it across the board or wherever we had to cut it to make it fit.
Carol, give your notes to Patsy, and she'll bring them forward.
I'm going to meet with you.
Please do.
Are there any further questions? Comments? I move, all those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Our motion carries. Item number 7. Resolution authorizing the insurance of tax of anticipation notes of Champaign County. Moved by Tom, second by Ralph. Any comments, questions? None. Seeing none. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye. Aye.
Roll call.
Roll call.
Roll call. You want to do that?
Yeah.
Sure. Can I get a roll call?
Quisenberry?
Yes.
Richards?
Yes.
Schrader?
Yes.
Weibel? Alex?
Yes.
Ammons?
No.
Binzel?
Yes.
Berkson?
Yes.
Betts?
Yes.
Carter?
Yes.
Coart?
Yes.
Ezri?
Yes.
Holderfield?
No.
James?
No.
Jay?
No.
Kibler?
Yes.
Kurtz? Langenheim?
Yes.
Maxwell?
Yes.
Michaels?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Mosier?
Yes.
Petrie?
No.
And Rosales.
Yes, motion carries. That leads us to other business, item F. If there's no other business, I would like to quickly move on. Stan?
What am I going to do?
Pardon? there's no chairs. There are no chairs reports. And then designation of items to be placed on county board consent is A2, 3, 4, C1, 2, 3, 4, D1 and 2, E3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Actually,
didn't C4 have nose?
Pardon?
Yeah.
Didn't C4 have nose?
5 is not.
Yeah, I think C4 had nose. You can't do C4.
No C4.
And you cannot do E5 or 6. They need to be on the regular agenda.
I'll repeat one last time. Item E to be placed on the consent agenda is E3 and E7.
No, E7.
No E7?
It had no vote. It can't go on. We got it.
Everybody,
you can adjourn the committee.
Thank you. I'll be at Carol's.
I'm cooking.
We're done. Committee's adjourned. Good. Thank you.
I didn't know
either. You did a great job. Hey.